Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Coffee Chats with Researchers. As always, I am Katie Butner, and in this conversation, I'm speaking with Dr. Chiara Sabina, who actually comes to us for the Center for Research on Ending Violence at Rutgers University School of Social Work, which is also where I am joining you from. So we did record this virtually, but we're in buildings that are next door to each other. So I have the pleasure of getting to see Dr. Sabina frequently and to learn from her scholarship on the regular. So in this conversation, you get to get some further insight, as did I, to just the incredible work that she's doing. She comes to social work and to this department or program as a social psychologist and focuses a lot of her research on community-driven work and the sort of true impact that allowing communities to lead interventions and direct change, the real impact that that can have. There's a quote in here that I pulled that just really, I think, stuck with me, where she says, the problem that we're working with doesn't know a discipline. And if ever there was an episode where we really commit to that conversation, I think this is certainly one of them. So stay tuned, enjoy, and we hope to see you again for the next episode of Coffee Chats with Researchers. Welcome.
Thank you
so much for being here. We're going to start with just doing a who's in the room. So if you can give an introduction to yourself and just tell me a little bit about who you are.
Well, I'm Chiara Sabina. I'm an associate professor and the associate director of the Center for Research on Ending Violence. This is my second year at Rutgers. I am trained as a social psychologist, and I am really enjoying being in a social work program.
So can you tell me, what is a social psychologist? What is that?
Well, as you know, there's many, many branches of psychology, and I look at it as trying to understand the social influences on behavior, mostly at the individual level, although there's some group level work. And let's see, in my training, I took courses on attitudes and how to change people's attitudes. There was a lot of 2x2 experimental designs and things of the like. And so I appreciate social psychology very much, but I feel that my focus on gender-based violence has taken me beyond that and has allowed me to work with different disciplines. So my first position was as a community psychologist in a community psychology program. And then I was in a women and gender studies program. And now I'm in the School of Social Work. So you could see that kind of jumped around in disciplines, but all focused things together. And social psychology is used in this work, especially around bystander prevention and getting people motivated to act and how we could kind of encourage that. I wouldn't say that my work only fits within social psychology, though. I would say I've kind of gone into other disciplines.
Yeah. So one of the things that you mentioned, or a couple, but what has brought you to gender-based violence? I guess I have two questions in there, but like the process to getting from social psychology, from those, like you're saying, gender-based violence has allowed you to kind of expand what your research or your even research designs look like. What brought you to that field or to decide to move within those disciplines? Because that aspect of changing from one to another is not always common among academics or researchers in particular, because you need to have a pretty convincing or universal, you know, people have to want or buy into the diversity of your research too, because disciplines can be kind of maybe closed off or maybe limited in terms of the kind of letting outsiders in, if you will, or right, that the people feel like their discipline comes with a certain amount of or a certain type of teaching or a certain way that you do things. And so it can be kind of siloing or really limiting if you haven't been, quote unquote, brought up in that discipline and thus brought up in that way of working. It's not even really a way of thinking. Disciplines tend to attach to certain processes. So what kind of led you to gender-based violence in a social work context, but also what has been your process or like decision-making around changing it within disciplines also?
I would say it's two things. One is that what drives me is the vision, the goal of bringing more diversity to the study of gender-based violence and trying to have a more realistic representation of folks. I focus mostly on the Latinx population. And so that particular, I guess, drive, focus has been consistent in whatever department I have been in and will remain to be so. And I feel like each of these approaches are different, perhaps slices or even parts of slices, because it's really not the problem we're working with doesn't know a discipline.
Right. Absolutely.
We need various approaches. We need people to think outside of the box. So I think one is just the nature of what we study, and the way that I think about it is focusing on the issue as my primary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And other part of it is just serendipity, really, about where my life has taken me and
sure,
and what has opened up at different times, but always with the eye of how will this work fit in this context, as averse to how am I going to fit in that context?
Sure.
Right? It's like putting the center somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
What have those transitions kind of been like for you, I guess? And I mean, it sounds positive and sort of motivating. And like you're saying, there's such a need for diversity of thought, diversity of approach. And so what do you think has been kind of your biggest lesson in those transitions? What have you been sort of carrying throughout as you have been able to have kind of a unique experience with these different lenses of approach?
What has been the biggest lesson?
Asking the tough questions over here, you know?
That's good. I think each of these moves have made me learn more, have made me expand my way of thinking. When, for example, when I went to women and gender studies, there were different conversations going on around feminism and the different waves of feminism and where we need to be moving now. How do we account for gender diversity? And so I've had to kind of reflect on that and have that inform my work. And I think much more can be done on that in my work and work in general. Coming to the School of Social Work, there's been a lot more focus on practice implications, right? On, so what are we going to do about all of this? And that's, it's not to say that it wasn't part of my thought or work before, but it's an ever-present question in the School of Social Work, which I really appreciate because it really does take me back to why I've chosen this field is to have an impact, to make a difference. And so,
sure.
You know, I doing survey research, collecting the data, running stats, I mean, that's all great. And then what are actionable steps that can come from this, you know?
Absolutely.
So I really appreciate that coming here. So I, you know, those are like two examples, I think, of how my academic context, I've tried to allow it to enrich my thinking and to be open.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very beautifully put.
Thank
you. And I appreciate the moment you took to reflect on it too. Yeah. I mean, I think so many, we operate in a world and like even just in a context of where we just sort of have things prepared and we just say the things that come to our mind. And sometimes that's helpful, but it's like, I appreciate your intention to pause and answer the question and reflect on that. And ultimately just that engagement with different ways of thinking, which to me is the base of interest in higher education, even at the end of the day, is being exposed to new and alternative different ways that people have gone about looking at a problem. I think, you know, sometimes we lose sight of that, or we don't. There's so many other conflicting or competing time constraints that can get lost. But at the end of the day, like what you're talking about is that aspect of continuing to engage in conversation and new ideas enriches the ability to understand and support what is ultimately making change and hopefully supporting the human experience and, you know, making it more supportive and inclusive and equitable for people.
Yeah, I have an example along those lines. As I said, my work focuses on the Latinx population, and some of the work that I've done has really looked at acculturation, which is how much U.S. cultural values, the language, etc., and using this as a way of looking at their violence experiences. So are those that are more acculturated more likely to be victimized? How does it affect their help-seeking responses? And I think that's an interesting question. And I thought it was an interesting question, especially from a cultural perspective, cultural psychology, you could kind of think about that. And I've worked on it. I've answered the questions. And now I'm like, that's missing the mark. That's just, you know, it's part of the answer, but it's not enough of the answer. And, you know, I think time in women's studies or time around critical race theory really starts shifting the question of maybe it's not Latinos adjusting to U.S. culture, but how well are they received? What's the treatment? What are policies like? What, you know, what is the larger context and how does that influence victimization versus how much are you speaking English? We need to look at other levels of analysis and look beyond a group fitting in, you know, like just that the nature of the question has changed both because of being exposed to multiple disciplines, but also our current thinking, our current critique and discussion of systematic racism. So that's an example of how, you know, my thoughts, my approach have changed over time.
What you just mentioned too, I think gets at what I hope is continues to be addressed overall in the field, whether it's gender-based violence and beyond, but that hint at like the measurement, like it's not that we're struggling to understand a population or support a population as much as we're asking a question that is not actually getting at what's going on. So, and I'm not saying it as eloquently as you just did, but that you spoke on a lot of elements, but that part of like we're continuing to grow and hopefully critique ourselves around how are we built on a foundation of maybe asking the wrong questions or not wrong, but questions that were rooted in the somewhat limited thinking of the time that didn't take into account the realities of acculturation as highlighting your example or of systemic racism so that the way that we're approaching a problem is also with the tenets of those things, maybe even unintentionally, but at the aspect of we're asking a question and getting responses that are also rooted in those same ideas. And so like moving forward, pushing ourselves in the field to ask better questions, to ask questions that are continuing to evolve in our understanding and sort of viewpoint of how groups and populations have been routinely and historically minimized, limited, oppressed, and how do we do better in even our research and data collection so that we're actually adequately and more accurately portraying the reality of experience and not through a lens that is rooted in what we know to be inherently oppressive.
Exactly. Very well said. We need to think of beyond these stereotypical concepts.
You know, always that line, which is, I'm like, let's keep going down this path of conversation because it's interesting and engaging and, of course, an important one. And also to say that I want to hear more about you and what you currently have going on in your world. Because, you know, you've given up some context or illuminated some of the process for you that has led you here to be at Rutgers and at the Center for Research on Ending Violence. But also, what do you currently have going on? What projects are currently in the works for you or are you sort of gearing up for?
Sure. Well, some of it is analyzing data that I have and trying to get at some of the more nuanced questions, some of the cultural factors that I mentioned, along with, you know, how that affects the link between victimization and distress. So we have some analyses going on there, not yet completed, but in the works. I'm also gearing up on a project in Quito, Ecuador, that is exciting to me. And this uses an approach called integrative community therapy with domestic violence survivors in the city of Quito to look at how this approach, which is a non-hierarchical dialogue circle.
Okay.
So it's like a group-based approach that's not led by a professional, somebody with some training on these groups, but not a degreed kind of professional, in which people share about their emotions, their struggles, and the group collectively works to address and share what they've experienced and how they've gotten through whatever issue or feeling that was shared. And it draws on the local culture and really tries to create a group atmosphere and a collective kind of healing approach. And so I've tested this approach with domestic violence survivors there and ran like a quasi-experimental design looking at that, and found that the six-week program helps more than the comparison group with things like self-esteem, social support, health and well-being. And so these are really exciting results. And now we're working with a Rutgers Global Health Seed Grant. We're working to actually train DV survivors to run these circles themselves in their own communities. And I'm really interested in it because is the collective approach, I think, will help. It's more culturally congruent.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of reaching out for services or calling the police or seeking a shelter is not always available, is not always something that survivors necessarily turn to. And this is another option for working on these issues and getting support that's more community-based.
Okay.
So I'm really excited about that. And we're working through the process, the evaluation part that I explained, that part's already done. But now the training for the DV survivors to run these circles themselves, that's the part that we're working on getting going now after some IRB hurdles.
Yep.
So I'm excited to see how that goes. And I was just having some conversations about possibly bringing this approach to the United States to work with Latinas here in the United States.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a 5-year goal, but we're in that direction. We're making some headway. So to me, this gets at the, so what are we going to do about it? I feel like we need different visionings of what to do. I've studied help seeking. I've looked at help seeking. And while I think it should be very helpful, should and does help with crises and dealing with emotions, we also realize that it doesn't reach everybody, especially with Latinas.
Yeah.
We need other ideas. We need other approaches. And so this is one of possibly many, but this is one that I could work on right now to look at what are some programs, approaches that can target more groups, be inclusive of more groups.
Absolutely. So, and the model puts change in the hands of the community, which ultimately research has demonstrated that the longevity and sustainability of that is just a huge impact and a huge opportunity for change in a way that actually supports the community and doesn't take away inherent power, inherent knowledge.
Right, right. Because it's not, you should do this, you should do that. I'm coming here from somewhere out of your community to tell you what's going on. We're going to collectively share. We're going to do this collective process. And I'm just here as a guide. In fact, it's best if I don't talk.
Right.
And so, you know, I have community partners in Ecuador that I'm working on with this, that do the training, that do this particular approach, integrative community therapy, which comes from Brazil. We'll see what happens. We'll see what
happens. That's incredible.
Yeah. Thank you.
Congratulations. I've done some mental health work in India. And similarly, the model was, and some sort of health promotion work, really, I mean, it was built from community organizing and like community connections, but it was really about just like supporting the community members who selected into wanting to be a part of the program, mentorship in a kind of mentorship model, supporting them in getting trained to receive information, really. That's kind of really it, is supporting them in kind of like asking questions and that kind of stuff. But to go out and do mental health and wellness healthcare checks and stuff, and it's been incredibly sustainable and really a game changer for the communities in particular for exactly that reason. From a research perspective, people and folks, we were supporting them in like answering questions and delivering, how do we support you in figuring this out? But really we're on the sidelines and really to demonstrate the effectiveness of the model more than anything else. And otherwise, it's really the community members deciding that this was something that was important to them and that they wanted to have a say in, and then deciding that they wanted to be trained and just going from there. And it's been really great. So
we hear all about it.
Yeah. Over ice cream.
Yes, that's the best way.
Of you listening, that's what we're doing after this, eating ice cream. So the benefits of working at Rutgers, you know, if we're doing anything, and we're also pitching the Rutgers School of Social Work right now, we have fun events like ice cream socials and stuff.
Very nice, relaxing space. Yes.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm excited. So that's a lot of ongoing things. And in addition to administrative work and duties, as I know that you just recently stepped into this space as the Assistant Director for Center on Research for Ending Violence, or REV. And so you got a lot going on.
That's right.
Never ending. Thinking about, you know, some of what you just shared, when moving forward, kind of what do you see as the biggest gaps or areas that you would want folks to pay attention to, whether it's research grantors or agencies that are looking to support work or support research in the areas that you kind of touch on? Where would you want to see more attention being paid?
I am going to continue with my theme, that we need more attention to intersectionality
in
line of work. That, and even critiquing myself, you know, looking at the Latina population, that's not enough. There's a whole lot of diversity that we're talking about here within the population. We sometimes talk about sexual identity. We are starting to look at people who are trans and non-binary, but we really haven't done enough by a lot. How do these intersect with different racial ethnic groups? Immigration, you know, there's lots and lots of complexities here that we've kind of glossed over, or at most done comparison. And I feel that we need a much richer dive into that complexity. So I would say intersectional work about intersectional identities. And then the other part of that would be looking at gender-based violence or interpersonal violence more broadly. How does this work or affect other forms of violence and discrimination?
Mm-hmm.
For example, violence and self-directed violence. How does overt and covert discrimination affect the experiences of different forms of violence? It could be political violence, it could be legal violence, it could be self-directed violence. But I feel that we also need that in the conversation in this field, and the field being gender-based violence, that we need to account for that. Because as soon as we start talking about issues of immigration or racial diversity or language barriers, we're going to be hitting these other forms of violence as well that are experienced by people. And so if we're keeping that end goal, if we're keeping that focus on helping people having these experiences, we can't just ignore these other parts of their lives and these other experiences. So I think we also need a bit more of diversity in that realm, looking at other forms of violence, how they intersect.
Yeah. Well, I think that then I'd have a general sense of your answer to my favorite last question, but I'm going to gently guide us there. If you then had a pot of money that was unrestricted and not time bound, or maybe like deliverable bound, what would you do with it? What would you use it for? What would you create? What program would you do? What research project would you conduct?
How beneficial is it to give away money?
Listen, you know, that's an option, right? Absolutely.
All right. So short of giving it away, yes, I think that we need intervention points that account for various forms of identity. And so how does prevention and intervention look when we address, account, include all these different forms of identity?
Mm-hmm.
How can we better reach populations that are underserved And so I guess monies would be as far as exploring possibilities that go beyond traditional DV and SA services. How can we think outside the box? I'd want to think about alternatives that go beyond what we have right now. Our legal approaches, hospital approaches, and victim services. How can we expand those? How can we bring in prevention? How can we bring in holistic healing? How can we bring in affirming identity and cultural values?
Yeah.
Those would be all the things that I would want to explore. I wish I had that
sorting it out.
Well, I've been saying pretty much with every time I ask this question, I'm like, maybe if we say it here, we'll just speak it into existence. You know, at least they say, the quote unquote, they tell us that the more I see something, the more it'll appear, the more you put your energy and your attention into something. So maybe if we just keep envisioning those outcomes or that happening, that it'll come true. We'll manifest it into reality.
I like your thinking.
I'm not going to lie, though. I've said that a lot of times. So I'm manifesting a lot of buckets of money. I can't promise it'll be yours. It'll be somebody's. So thank you so much. Do you have any last thoughts or things you'd want to make sure are shared, or anything else that you'd want, you know, anyone listening to know about you, about your work, about ways to interact or get involved, or things that you'd want them to learn more about?
I've been meeting and mentoring new people coming into this field that are interested in this field. And I think that there's a lot of excitement, a lot of new thought. And I would just encourage people that are coming into the field to continue to speak your truth and to push the field forward, even if it feels uncomfortable.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's what I want to end on.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And I'm going to see you in a few minutes anyway. So thank you.
Sounds good. See you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Coffee Chats with Researchers. You can always find more of these coffee chats on our website, which is vawconsortium.rutgers.edu. And of course, you can always reach out to us via social media or via email. We are always happy to hear from you with your thoughts, your questions, your feedback, or just generally to give us a hello. As always, stay curious, ask questions, drink coffee, and we will see you for our next episode of Coffee Chats with Researchers.